Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Dynamite preview. We are the Dudley Boys of What Culture. I'm Adam Wilborn, joined by Michael Hanfler and Michael Sidgwick, here to look ahead to tonight's episode of AEW Dynamite. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube, where we do daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Dynamite, but also AEW Collision, Raw, SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. Pay-per-views, premium live events, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a round of the week complete, and a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, they're joined by Hamlet and Sidgwick to look ahead to Dynamite tonight and the go-home show ahead of AEW Dynasty.
I need a good one. Last 2 weeks have been wildly uneven, and nadir has been reached at various points. I'm a little bit narked and annoyed with the AEW product of late. Just pissy, petty, five-year-old paradigms all over this goddamn show. Get your bloody head down. Do some good stuff. Don't be self-conscious. Put your best foot forward. Stop being gotten to. Stop being so small. It feels small in every way. Obviously, it's going to take a lot of work to get the crowds back up, to make it feel like 2021 again. So it's not a simple, quick fix. But my God, the mentality of the company at the moment just feels so small. It just feels small. And when it feels as small as it does, it doesn't really feel like what AEW used to feel like in this sort of major arena competitor, where it was loud, vibrant, fresh, original, unbelievable at its peak. I just feel like the CM Punk business, I likened it. We did a Q&A on our YouTube on Monday. You can still check it out on the feed. I likened it to a terrible seventh or eighth installment in a horror franchise where somehow the baddies come back. Why? It makes no sense for the baddie to come back. So why is he back? Just get over CM Punk, okay? Get over it. Shut up. Head down. Move forward with your left foot and just be good because you were getting there.
Yeah, you said
were really, really getting there.
The power was coming back.
It was coming back, and then they just pissed it away. I mean, I don't know. I'm in a mood. Like, just the amount of petty, crappy stuff. There's a pay-per-view on Sunday.
Yeah.
On paper, looks incredible. Get me excited about that.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued to know your thoughts. How does AEW recover from last week, and what did you make of everything that went down?
We talked a little bit over the desk about this yesterday. Like, Punk's interview was, like, destined ultimately once they got into the meat of it, and you knew what, like, Ariel Helwani and CM Punk had discussed beforehand, and you know their prior trust and how far it was maybe going to go. Punk is just this captivating speaker anyway. I think I love him, but I know people that hate him, and if anything, we kind of agree on the fact that we both just can't look away from him regardless. And that interview was perhaps destined to have a ripple effect somewhere, but I didn't expect it to have a ripple effect on AEW's weekly television output. I did think, right, there's going to be more relitigation, and that might just happen in on a sort of a three-monthly loop, I don't know, on X, but who really cares? Like, if Dynamite and if AEW maintain the momentum they've had since, like, I guess Christmas, but certainly, like, all of 2024, I would say they've had a good year creatively. Who really cares what Punk says that then gets talked about on X that results in, like, even to the extent of the Young Bucks entrance where Matt Jackson shouted out Jack Perry, and it was, say if it had just been that.
Mm.
Like, but I the big takeaway was, don't get obsessed proving him wrong, prove him right. CM Punk went on there, and amongst all the other things he did say, he was going to tell his version of the story. Like, you would have all the other people involved, a Jack Perry, a Samoa Joe, Matt and Nick Jackson would eventually one day have their opportunity to tell their side of the story. And like every wrestling fight ever told through shoot interviews, you would be able to paint a picture where both first sides of the story telling their version of the truth, and the real truth is somewhere in the middle. The bit that got me was when he was saying, he was parroting a criticism that a lot of people have given since Punk himself has returned to WWE, which is WWE is a business. AEW's like a vanity project for five-star matches because a wrestling fan's got money. Those weren't his words, but that was effectively what he was saying. Prove that right. Mm. Like, put on those five-star matches. Like, Punk talking about not wanting to claim is just a very CM Punk thing to say, because of course he would want the five stars and all that sort of stuff too. He wrestled for that section of the audience for years and years and years, and then used that relationship with the audience to create a WWE run off the back of it that was different to a John Cena and different to a Randy Orton. But AEW should be the place he was describing. It shouldn't be the place that worries most about the bottom line, because the bottom line comes when the product is good, when the product is there. Five-star billionaires plaything vanity project, because that stuff in itself has proven in the past to draw, has proven to generate money as a challenger brand. You only 2021 is the time to go back to. You know, there was, I'll never forget those weeks where we were, where Chris Jericho had been ballsy enough to say it, but we were all looking and going, are they going to catch Raw here?
Yeah.
And it was a way off, but it was not unrealistic. And they were doing it through the wrestling forward philosophy and the storytelling philosophy that had got AEW all that instant love from the fan base. So the idea was to just keep doing that. We've said this repeatedly. It was never going to change overnight. The pendulum was never going to swing back in AEW's favor overnight, but a solid 6 to 8 months of the type of AEW we had in 2024, straight away, AEW's base would be more sort of solidified than ever in their belief that this is the best. Like, I keep forgetting this phrase, but it's where the best wrestle.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like, that was going to feel real if they'd have just continued on the path they were going. They picked, and I appreciate wrestling's complex, and something like Billy Gunn and Jay White feels like the sort of thing where maybe on the day, Daddy Ass played a bit of politics or put his foot down or whatever, and what might have been in mind didn't happen on television. Wrestling, that can happen.
Yeah.
But it feels to me like AEW, independent of CM Punk, picked pretty much the worst 2 to 3 week period to fall off a bit. Not only have you got an on fire WWE celebrating itself while fans celebrate it too, you've also got your own pay-per-view to build that you should have been able to just hold the wheel and stay the course in the weeks while WWE gets all the headlines.
Yes.
Just send Will Ospreay out there 2 weeks in a row for 2 more 4.5-star matches. Send Samoa Joe, and like the Samoa Joe Swerve Strickland bit with the blood, like, was the closest I can think in the last few weeks to a proper 2024 AEW, we're trying to sell the pay-per-view segment. And
Sid himself said, well, that's it now. You've done it for the pay-per-view 2 weeks before it actually happened.
I think a little bit of it is bad luck, but a lot of it feels like poor direction. To go off in the directions you have done in this specific 2-3 week period was crazy to me. You know, like I say, right now, there was a Raw that just happened where WWE were basically saying, right, we've kind of moved on from WrestleMania now. This was the week where if AEW hadn't gone a bit wild for the past fortnight, they'd be like, yeah, we were here all along and now it's our pay-per-view on Sunday, so we get the conversation back and all that sort of, and they've blown that. They've got a go-home show to fix that now.
They've suffered absolute catastrophic head loss, in my opinion. It could all get salvaged. We do try to be wary of not being too impulsive. And it's week to week, and it's quite hard when you're in the weeds. But this, it just feels to me like Tony Khan and AEW, they just cannot handle the fact that WWE is getting the critical acclaim now. They've got this ridiculous business going for them. There's no... Who are we versus?
Yeah.
That no longer exists. WWE, we raved about the Intercontinental title picture as an example, is just doing some really great stuff right now. And I don't think AEW as an entity is equipped to handle it, because their entire philosophy from day one was, don't do what Donnie WWE does.
Yes.
That was their entire selling point. That was why the unicorn of the promotion was able to exist. Really, for the first time now, it's like, what can you do? I don't think there's much they can do. Just service your base as best you can and eat a lot of shit. You do not have the momentum. You no longer have the USP, it could be argued.
Well, is it Donnie WWE right now is selling buildings out. Selling so they're not doing that, but that's the opposite of how it would have once been, wouldn't it?
Like, you know, Gunther, Sami Zayn, Chad Gable, like, those are really good matches with a true emotional weight that I don't think anything in AEW's got going for it right now. I don't know what AEW has left, realistically. Obviously, that unbelievably high caliber in-ring is probably better than WWE's right now. They have that. They still have that. It feels a bit more real. It feels like less robotic and synthetic. But that doesn't seem to matter because the WWE being slightly more human, slightly more rooted in human stories, like this Sami Zayn, Chad Gable stuff, they'll always get the benefit from what it used to look like. If you're AEW right now, you just have to keep on going.
Mm.
Do the best you can. Don't be reactionary. Don't be pissy. Don't be petty. Just be self-assured in the storytelling that you do.
That's a really good point because WWE will, as Sid just pointed out, 4 years, to his credit, will benefit from comparison over and over again. AEW continue to suffer from comparison.
Yeah.
They will suffer from comparison for just as long, realistically, from the, like, I would say certainly 2019 to 2021, and then you can argue at what point in 2020 things started to shift. Like, they will suffer the comparison of now to those that sort of two-year period. AEW needs, we've waxed lyrical on podcasts for years, myself and Sidgwick, the lived-in experience of specifically Bret Hart, but also the likes of Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon, and the 1-2-3 Kid. AEW kind of needs its new generation. Like, solidify the love from your base and wait patiently for the good days to come again. But whatever you do, don't alienate in that middle bit. Yes, there was pig farmers and bin men, but we weren't going to switch off because what we really, really wanted was still there.
And they're in the Indiana Farmers Coliseum tonight.
Well, the equivalent of pig farmers and bin men are daddy ass knocking Jay White all over and they're playing the CM Punk footage. But you have to keep providing Brett and Sean and Kid and Razor because the good days will come again. And then you need to remember that there was still something there for you when it wasn't quite as hot.
I suppose they've got an element of that as well tonight, Sid, in terms of one of the main guys who was there for its peak. Jon Moxley returns tonight, new IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. Excited to see him back.
I'm excited to see him back. I want him to cut a goddamn promo and do nothing at Dynasty. That's what I want. It makes kind of no sense when you need 2 hours of, we've got a pay-per-view that you need to get excited about. But I think that card is already completely stacked. I think Tony Khan is obviously going to do the Tony Khan thing and just not adhere to the less is more strategy. I'm already worried about what Chris Jericho is going to do on that show. So I don't know what Jon Moxley does now. If anything, I would like him to be a pure New Japan guy for as long as the duration of his reign. So I don't know what this exists to do. Does anyone challenge him? Do they do a sort of a quasi New Japan match on Dynasty where I know he's got Shooter on May 11th, I think it is, in the States, which just surprised me. Maybe they could do Moxley versus, I don't know. He's already worked in the Gata, hasn't he? Like, a New Japan guy that he can beat. I don't know who that is. I don't know what goes on here, but I guess it's an interesting hook.
Is there any chance that If a match is getting added to the pay-per-view, it's BCC, Don Callis family related? And does he come out as the new IWGP champion, just do a bit of a statement of intent promo as champion as relates to his New Japan run, but then gets interrupted or gets challenged by a powerhouse Hobbs or a Kyle Fletcher as a sort of, my guy Ospreay is taking on your guy Danielson, maybe I have a go at you. And Moxley's good in that scenario. Give Kyle Fletcher a great night and drill him extra hard on that head of his just to make a point that this was a hard fight. Could it just be there to...
Potentially, that's a direction.
Eight matches right now on the Dynasty card. There was nine...
Eerie quiet before you know something's going to happen.
There was 11... Well, technically there was 11 on Revolution, but nine on the main card. I don't hope we don't hit double figures, but I sense we may do for
it
matches.
It seems to happen every other time. For me, the whole thing with Jon Moxley was, up until he was announced for Dynamite, it was the have cake, eat cake thing, where it's like, right, he's not in AEW. which is good because he was kind of overexposed
there,
as we've talked about extensively. He goes to New Japan. He can help revive that company's fortunes, or if that's way too ambitious, he can at least make it seem a little... He could be the Steve Bruce. He could be the solid pair of hands there. And you enhance one and enhance the other through his absence and his presence, if that makes any sense. I don't know what he's doing on Dynamite. It feels object defeating for me, but we'll see.
Is he there live? Is it just one of his, like, could it be just a video promo? And
I think he's going to be there live. Right. They've hyped it up.
We're the hype in it, yeah. Okay.
But yeah, this is the go home show ahead of Dynasty. We've got Swerve and Samoa Joe set to speak. Like we said, Sige, they kind of did everything they needed to do 2 weeks ago.
Previously.
Yeah.
In the Samoa Joe versus Swerve Strickland feud. Maybe a little bit cynical in general, but cynical about this. I wouldn't be surprised if Swerve Strickland says the same thing he's realistically been saying for 6 months, and it's my time to win the title, and I've prove myself capable of being the champion, et cetera, et cetera. I feel like it's just going to be a bit of a recap of... They're just going to regurgitate the premise to each other. They've been doing that, bar that one blood angle, which they probably should have saved for tonight. And they've been doing that the entire time. It's a real story here. I don't really believe the conflict. It's tweener versus tweener. This world title program and scene since World's End has been that sort of, oh yeah, AEW's really getting hot right now. If we kind of ignore the most theoretically important thing about it. I'm ready for the switch. I'm ready to move on from Joe in that picture to the point now where, because I've heard Swerve kind of say a lot of the same things over and over and over again, it's like, what does he look like as a champion? Am I buying that as the next thing that allows AEW to recover former glories? I'm really quite down on this world title picture in general. Have been for quite some time. The best I can hope for tonight is that Swerve has saved some of his best threats. And he's really good. I'm not saying he isn't really good, but this is a company that used to be great. This is a company that I want to be great once more. I continue to fret that Swerve Strickland isn't the guy that AEW needs in 2024.
It's weird, isn't it? Because it feels like we've been waiting, as Sige said, for months and months and months for them to finally strap up Swerve Strickland. And now it feels like whenever I go to talk
should
about
it... Should you have done it at World's End? After all this, what's the net positive from strapping up Joe?
It was revolution.
I understand the thought process.
It was revolution for me because I remember, I'm sure we discussed this, my feeling at the time was you strap Swerve at Revolution because you don't then have to worry about what he does next in the aftermath of this celebrated, rightfully so, Hangman Page rivalry. Mm-hmm. The follow-on to that was always going to be difficult. That rivalry was huge. It still is huge. Whenever Page comes back, they're going to be like legacy rivals. The follow-on was always going to feel like a follow-on. You know, like, Austin's moving on to Owen. How good can that really be after he's fought Brett? And it was pretty great, but like,
you
felt like a follow-on. And like, that's a hard job for a booker to figure out. And Swerve hasn't even got the belt yet. So Joe, the world champion, feels like the inferior follow-on to what Swerve was doing with Hangman Page. And they had it in the hands at Revolution. And I just thought, like, it was always going to be a mountain to climb because you were always going to stretch people's patience with Joe as, like, the stability guy. When they needed a stability champion, he was the right guy. But I think you were always going to stretch people with that when you were trying to follow. Like, Swerve was... One of the reasons Swerve was so hot, like Hangman Page made him. Like, Swerve was a guy and was on the rise, but it always takes that one program and that one feud to get somebody to that level where everybody feels it. And Page made him, and you always have to follow that. And typically, if the star-making feud ends with the made man as a champion, then he's walking around with a belt. Cody and Roman. Cody's not got anyone yet, and it's a different story, but nonetheless, he's just got his belt, and that's enough. If that had been Swerve, then it wouldn't have felt such a come-down. No?
It's very Tony Khan with how long he takes to do things to book a 5-month transitional title reign. You know what I mean? That's what it felt like from the jump. Samoa Joe was really, like, if you look at how they've done it historically, Jericho to Mox to Omega to Page, and then the Punk, and then it got weird for a while, and then MGF restored the path. For the first time, Joe's felt like the guy who's in place, like the transitional champion. They've never really had one. They've had their big aces, their big sort of season leads, and then it all went completely askew with CM Punk. And then MJF kind of restored that. for the first time, they've had a transitional champion in Tony Khan, being Tony Khan, and how long he takes to do various things. It's booked him for 5 months. And what's worse now is that Swerve, in the wake of Ospreay, feels like another transitional champion.
This is what I was going to say. Yeah, it's not Swerve or Joe's fault, this. Arguably, AEW should have probably anticipated this, but the moment they bring in Ospreay, now when I talk about Swerve as world champion and finally him achieving this, it's like, he's world champion, probably until they get to London, because then Ospreay needs to be strapped up. And even then, that feels...
It's just the botch the world title scene for me.
It's the brutality of trying your hardest to keep meritocracy as well, isn't it? Like, we talk about this all the time. You want to sign Wrestler X, but if Wrestler X raises the quality bar to such an extent that Will Ospreay does, or Kazuchika Okada eventually will, it does make it tough for the other guys have to keep up.
Yeah.
They have to, like, prove themselves over and over again.
And I don't want to belabor this point because I talked a lot about it on the Q&A, but I was at WrestleMania, and, like, good guy versus bad guy just wins every single time. If you can do that story masterfully well, like Punk MJF, Paige Omega, Cody MJF, I know the blow-off wasn't great, but the program was amazing. Every great thing AEW has done has been the thing that wrestling has always been most successful at doing, and it's just tweener city for this world title scene. Like, three tweeners at Revolution, tweener versus tweener now. Then you've got Swerve, who will have his own supporters in the expected program with Ospreay. Like, is it as simple as the thing that has always worked and always worked to its best effect? Savage Hogan to Hogan Warrior. I mean, there's one thing that gets remembered as the... I mean, it had the pay-per-view buy record for 9 years, was it?
Yeah.
9 years. Because they perfect... I mean, Hogan was a dickhead in that program, but young kids didn't know that, you know what I mean? Who were buying it. I want to see a proper babyface against a proper heel in AEW, and I just think this B-plus tweener stuff, I'm bored, I'm sick of it.
Something that I didn't think got a lot of play last week with the Punk security footage was credit to the Young Bucks and credit to FTR for trying to fold it into the story. Mm-hmm. And Tony Khan's since gone on record and talked about it and then done the long Tony Khan answer where he's not said yes or no, it was a good idea, but has said, well, as you can see, a lot went on that day in the Young Bucks, and he's tried to basically, you can see that it was all his doing, because he's basically telling you the story that the wrestlers were instructed to go out there and put over last week.
My honest first instinct was, is this Dak's idea?
Dak,
because
right?
It all ended up in a rah-rah Dak promo.
Yeah.
It's like, is he had a little game playing here? Obviously, he hasn't.
Well, what you were asked to ignore while accepting that this real-life fight has impacted the mental state of the Young Bucks at Wembley, you were asked to ignore... In kayfabe, because the wrestlers are trying to ask you to have there's a kayfabe knock-on effect of the fight. Joe's breaking it up, and he went straight out there and had one of the best matches of the show. Friggin' Malakai Black is a magic powers later, I best break up a fight. Like, they're in this too. Samoa Joe is a guy that on that same broadcast, you were asked to receive as this, like, big bad, and he's in the middle, like, directly impacted by this fight, and then you listen to the Young Bucks and FTR being like, I kind of wrecked our heads for the day. It's fine, I just got on with business and had me 3.5 star up and all. And that doesn't get brought up because it doesn't work. Like, you can't make sense of
it,
that.
It is very Bucks to get put out, whereas it wouldn't be for Joe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's unflappable as opposed to them. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just funny to me that, like, they're there as well. There's Hook, the guy he's just been fighting. I stand over here.
Yeah.
Like, all these characters existed in that as well. But it's like, you only think about these ones. Only think about, about Dex and his goddamn wife and daughter.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
On the subject of tweeners, Sige, is this the week with the Ospreay-Danielson match on the horizon? You got Ospreay-Claudio tonight.
Oh, my God.
Yes. But is this the week you finally say Ospreay gets away from the Don Callis family? Because it's weird he's been associated with them from the moment he properly came into AEW. And they've done all these, like, right, you're going to face other members of the Don Callis family. And then obviously you have the angle on Collision where they take out Bryan Danielson. He's not at the match, but they've, you know, not made him less than 100% for the match. Is this the week that Ospreay says to Callis, why did you do that? I want to face the best Bryan Danielson to prove I'm the best.
Well, we might be stepping on the dicks of the Dynasty preview here.
Yeah.
But I'll repeat myself. I was having a rant, Hamflet to Wilborn about this. The idea that Collision main event was Danielson and Claudio versus Hobbs and Fletcher. Mm-hmm. Callis wanted to soften Danielson up ahead of the match at Dynasty mm-hmm. by having him wrestle the Don Callis family and Will Ospreay.
Hobbs and Fletcher.
So Danielson gets softened up, but if anything, Ospreay, by wrestling the same people, his blade gets sharpened.
Yes.
And iron sharpens iron. It's so stupid. Like, it's total spreadsheet stuff. I'm with you. I need a line drawn under all this now. It's just getting really irritating. Like, it's very selective in terms of why they're doing these matches against one another. Spreadsheet stuff. I would have Callis interfere on Danielson's behalf. Danielson, you know, doesn't care, he'll take the win or whatever. I'd have Danielson go over. Danielson at some point needs to start winning. Ospreay isn't doing it a double or nothing.
No.
So he needs something to do before the inevitable happens. And maybe like another match with Takeshita with a stip, like in a different dynamic of proper babyface versus proper heel, as some emotion attached to it or whatever.
I could see that for double or nothing, yeah.
Yeah, like, because otherwise the ranking system won't mean anything. So I want that line drawn under, because it's just, I don't want to say, oh, it's confusing, because I'm not an idiot. I just don't think it's very effective. It could all be so much cleaner.
Yeah.
Like, again, you are going through old paradigms again. Like, the whole idea was, oh, baby faces and heels don't exist. That was Cody's thing as well upon the launch of AEW and in the years beforehand. And then the whole idea was, well, we trust the audience to grapple with how they perceive a Hangman Page, for example. Is he a bad guy at his core, or is he a flawed, anxious guy who does the odd bad thing, like tugging at Nick Jackson's leg, for example, because he's afraid and he projects and he lashes out, whatever. All that stuff, the new reality is the old reality. Babyface chases against bad dudes and toppling those bad dudes draws massive money, the most money. That's what does happen. Look at Cody versus Roman, right? And now
the work they do every week to protect Cody's babyface aura, even to the extent of this week, Jey Uso just saying, I want to do this on my own, so that when the Judgment Day were outnumbering him, you weren't going, where's Cody?
Yeah.
That's Cody following a simple little thing like that, because they've done that over and over again with Cody to protect the integrity of that gimmick.
And I think AEW needs to learn that lesson. It's getting very murky with the character dynamics and the motivations. And like, I know that you can't, they're not even copying WWE. It's just wrestling.
Yeah.
That's North American wrestling has always succeeded. Is there a peak in like various promotions or whatever, mainstream outfits I'm talking, that hasn't had a good versus evil story?
The only thing I could think of would be like Jerry Lawler, like being the King of Memphis and drawing weekly, and him being able to like fluctuate between being a healer or a babyface as that King character, but certainly not a mainstream national level. I don't think, like, I don't want to like be a hypocrite here and say, well, they're going to get these matches where nobody cares about the good guy and the bad guy, but the fans are going to stand up and clap and say something like, this is wrestling. Because that is absolutely what AEW should aim for. But I think Ospreay is a perfect example of this.
Had both, though.
Yeah.
Once upon a time.
He generates that response and then just makes sure he's a babyface.
Yeah.
Afterwards, like, the match can be the match. Everybody can just have these amazing memories, this incredible match. But, like, look at Omega Danielson at Grand Slam. Omega's the baddie, but you're watching this incredible match take place, but you never lose sight of who the good guy and the bad guy is in that. You can do both.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have got the Billy Goat versus the Human Horse tonight. Will Ospreay versus Claudio. A nice sort of preview for probably the match of the year on Sunday.
This is what AEW should do.
Yeah.
Like, this is as often as you can justify it and get away with it. It's not the dream match factory anymore. But in Ospreay and Okada, I think we're all getting those little, like, those vibes that can come back. Like, you don't necessarily think about who an Ospreay could fight until a graphic is flashed in front of you. I know Copeland said it, but, like, I kind of want to look at Ospreay and Adam Copeland because I just would have never have thought about it, really. And, like, it's, can you keep up with him? Like, not that Claudio's is, like, kind of long in the tooth as Adam Copeland, but it's that kind of match. It's like, I would just never have imagined it, and they're just going to go, as they should, 100 miles an hour. Like, this is the softening up match, more than any kind of collision tag.
Yeah, yeah.
This is Brian's mate softening with Ospreay up, as it should be. Ospreay will win.
Mm.
Still obvious winner, obvious loser, but...
Obviously, how down am I? How much is it? Am I being too doomy? I don't know. The last 2 weeks are just really freaking annoyed. It's just so small. This is going to be tits.
Yes.
This is what AEW is to me, to a degree. And Ospreay's Ospreay. He's absolutely incredible, and he will always play his part in an unbelievable match. Claudio Castagnoli in 2024 has been, quite frankly, incredible in terms of his in-ring form. His performance in Arena Mexico was just frightening. I think he was the best performer in that match. Understood the assignment. Yeah. It was class. The collision main event, he was the best performer in that. And it had Danielson in it, for God's sake. He is clearly enjoying his professional wrestling. He is an ageless, magnificent beast. Some of the stuff that they do in this match could be frightening. Like, what kind of swing reversal are we going to get?
Oh, I want Claudio to propel Ospreay up for the uppercut, but then Ospreay, like, hold on to the arm and, like, follow through with something like in one fluid motion, something along those
lines. Pop him up for the uppercut, go on his shoulders, spin round, poison Rana.
Yeah.
Like, you know when we give Wilborn grief as a running guy? I've got this idea for a spot, guys, and we say, no, it's physically impossible. It shouldn't be with these two.
It doesn't apply here. Yeah.
These are two absolute machines.
Claudio should go for the UFO and Ospreay should spin out of it.
Spin out of it into a poison Rana.
Spin out of the UFO. Like, he never does it. And he's like, I'm going to have to do it against this guy. Goes to the UFO, but Osprey's got such body control on Claudio's shoulders that, yeah, into poison Rana or something. Like, like half and half suplex or something like that.
I expect nothing less than to, like, drool, like, physically drool and be left, like, with my mouth agape. I want to make stupid noises in my living room when I watch this match. Anything less than a total, like, a mind explosion will be a disappointment. I mean, look at what they've got between them, what they could do together. This has got a total, like, five-star firework match written. I'll hour it. I cannot wait. It's going to be incredible. It's the rest of the show that I'm thinking.
I'm stepping on the dickiest preview. Do you think Ospreay Danielson headlines the pay-per-view? You think he dares not put the title match on last?
No, I think you'd rather... And I think they need to step up Swerve versus Joe. You look at the blood and the violence and this. I don't really feel it, but this apparent hatred that exists between the two men and the fact that it's got Pac Okada. I have my own problems with that potential match. Very minor ones. But the idea is, right, you've got Pac Okada, Ospreay Danielson, FTR Bucks ladder match. I mean, this is like, you know, those nerds, and I'm one of them, who would do, like, create their own match graphics for the Ultimate Supercard.
Yeah.
Dynasty kind of looks like that. Yeah. Realistically, it does. I would step this up. I think Swerve Joe needs the shortcuts. And I'm not that high on the prospect. I know I've said this, like, earlier when it was more relevant to talk about, but I would step it up big time. I don't think it headlines, no.
Because he put, I'm just thinking, because he put Danielson Okada on last at Forbidden Door. Sting was in the main event of Revolution. He's got away a little bit from his...
He has, from his tradition, he has. I can just see... I always see the worst case. I wish I could change that about myself, but I can't. I can see a sort of a exhausted hum cloaking that main event, if it is in fact the main event.
But yeah, so much to look forward to on Dynasty. Ospreay, Danielson, as you say, potentially Swerve being crowned world champion, Tony Storm, Thunder Rosa, Pac Okada, Bucks FTR, and potentially another match being added, because tonight Taz brokers the Jericho Hook meeting, Sig.
I can't be arsed for this. I cannot be arsed for this at all. Chris Jericho needs to go away. I need to stop saying Chris Jericho needs to go away, but until he doesn't go away, I will keep saying he needs to go away.
He applied to trademark the Jericho Vortex, did I see?
He needs to go away. Like, it's one of those things where, clearly, he's a pro wrestler, so he's chronically online. Hmm. He understands, he's always prided himself on being the one guy who wasn't in the WWE bubble when he was in WWE. He's like, I don't want to go away. I know when people are turning on me. I know, I'm clever, I'm smart, I'm with it. He still is, but you can't let go.
And is he making a myth of that? Was he in fact just smart enough to know when, like, his co-workers and his bosses were getting sick of him, and Tony Khan will never get sick of him? Like, is he making that out to be one big lie? Like,
it was always a bit of bollock.
Yeah. Because I bought into it. I was like, "There's a smart guy. He understands how TV wrestling works and
always come back with something new."
Yeah. Like,
and I love its embellishment. Why doesn't he do it anymore?
Yeah. I mean, insecurity of, I mean, that's, and all the rest.
I mean, that might be a rhetorical question. I don't want to see this match. I've seen it.
Yeah, we've already had it, haven't we? Yeah.
It was better than expected, is the nice way of putting it. Obviously, that'll be a different match if Jericho turns full-blown heel. If he beats up Taz, there could be heat there.
Not many people get heat on Taz, typically, and it's always good when they do.
Yeah.
Angle did it, didn't he? And, like,
Jericho, this Jericho Vortex stuff, it's so, I get it, guys. It's like, I'm going to lean in to the fact that you all want me to go away. So if you want to lean into that, why don't you just f*** off? Do you know what I mean? It feels like no good. You know, I've described in the past the no good can come of this match where it's like, you can't beat that guy or that guy. Why the wrestling? So either do a terrible DQ finish or one person goes under. Chris Jericho was the no good can come of this character. There's not a single thing he can do that I can foresee him doing. Like, no one really cares about him enough to turn heel. No one's really going to support him as a babyface at this point. Can he do anything with Sammy Guevara again? Who's he going to glom onto next? He doesn't have that. Jesus Christ, Jericho can still give. Doesn't. He can't. He's got nothing left. But he's going to be around and I have to watch it.
Does that...
If I'm Hook, I'm going. That's a more interesting thing to talk about, in my opinion. Because, you know, the rumours resurfaced that he would very much entertain the WWE offer. Go.
Yeah.
Go. He's still so young. Mm-hmm. Hopefully AEW will still exist in the next 5 to 10 years when he'll be in his wrestler's prime. Go. I've said a million times, his leaping clothesline looks like shit. It's about time. Like, I understand it's a bit harsh because he's not wrestled very often.
Yeah.
Some of his stuff looks actively bad. Hmm. In the schedule, even if he wrestles every week in AEW, I don't think that's enough. I think he needs to just work and work and work and work and work and work and work.
Because he had the hard stuff down straight away, didn't he?
He had the hard stuff down straight away, but the rest of it just hasn't really come as you'd expect. He's never going to headline a pay-per-view when you've got Okada, Ospreay. Kenny'll come back hopefully in 2-3 years. Moxley is not going to go away, even if people might want him to for a little bit, for altogether different reasons. Mm-hmm. Like Chris Jericho, it's like, I'll drive you to the Fozzy Tour myself. With John Moxley, it's like, I like you, but everyone has a saturation point or whatever. Hook needs to go. Hook and Wardlow would be my two. I want to miss you, and I want to see you come back better.
I just find, like, these conversations, like, it's just really bleak. You know, the first line in the English and American office uttered by the everyman Tim Jim character is, I am a paper salesman and I'm boring myself talking about it. this is a dream job. This is not working at a paper suppliers. I'm a wrestling podcaster and I'm boring myself talking about it. That's how Jericho makes me feel. I can't get angry anymore.
It's that 2019 WWE thing, isn't it? It's like I'm running out of ways to try and make my takes on this development interesting for the listeners.
I just feel sad and tired.
I'm making his job easier. Hopefully like a well-timed swear word can help make this interesting.
Yeah.
Go to Judas Effect, hook ducks, and you have Judas Effect Taz. There you go. Right.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. We also have a mixed tag tonight, which does not break the streak of Ladies' Night, by the way, just to clarify for anyone. it's Adam Copeland and Willow Nightingale taking on Julia Hart and Brody King. We'll talk a little bit about Mercedes in a second as well. Obviously, ahead of House of Black and the trios match at the Pape as well.
Good this. Weird. Like, good.
I'm sick of weird.
Oh, okay.
Let's get down to business. That's what I want.
I think this is good and weird.
Murray saved this for me earlier.
Yeah, he dropped a spot in, didn't he? What was it?
We were talking in the office and he's like, it's going to be so awesome when Willow Nightingale body slams Brody King.
Yeah.
Because they, rightfully in my opinion, it's a bloody minefield, this intergender stuff. But Willow body slamming Brody King, that's the way around. They always do one in AEW, that kind of spot, that way around.
I really liked when, like, more so than some of his singles matches, they've never been bad, but some just haven't been that great. I really liked it when Willow Nightingale made the save for Adam Copeland, because that's the kind of mixing in. I want to say he was, like, for all of his talk when he arrived, like, and I get why they did it. It's
just
like,
wear Christian.
It's like a lot of Christian. It's like when he came back to WWE, or Randy Orton, is it? Are you kidding? Like, so when Willow Nightingale arrived, now he's in different people. This is good. So I think I like just this arrangement of wrestlers. Brody King and Julia Hart are the best of the House of Black for me, realistically. Anyway, there's the Mercedes Moné element of it, and God, does she need to get physical as well? I don't mind this. Really, the match will be what it'll be, but I don't mind this as an arrangement of wrestlers who just aren't in mega hot stories. This is what I'd be doing with them too, I think.
So I mentioned the trios match that happens at Dynasty. We've also obviously got the TBS title match, Julia Hart versus Willow Nightingale. Mercedes has been involved in this. We're also set to hear from her tonight. I have been re-watching that footage of the attack, just really analysing the final sort of 30 seconds, see if I can get anything from it. And it's worth a rewatch, just to hyper-analyse what went down.
What went up?
But, you know, just listen to that audio again, see if we can catch anything in the background or anything. I don't know, any clues?
How many times have
to crack the case?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. It's good to see who the assailant was.
It's the audio equivalent of Zoom and Enhance. That's what I've been doing.
So how many times have you listened to this audio?
10 or 20 times, I've not picked up anything. But it's been it's not been
you had something in your hand.
Yeah, it's not been entirely wasted the time re-listening to the attack, but no clues as to who attacked Mercedes.
It's Indy Hartwell.
Indy Hartwell.
It's Chris Statlander. Trent whispers in her ear. She's sort of sideways involved anyway. It's Chris Statlander.
They literally had her out there the other week, wasn't it, when Willow's doing that good rah-rah speech of it's nice to be back here, and everyone loves Willow, obviously. And it's a Mercedes.
Rooster Mares. I'm glad he didn't go.
Oh, man, I nearly went. Jesus Christ. It's like the reverse of New Orleans. Nearly went to Worcester because we were landing in New York at a certain time that could have allowed us to rent a car and get there. Could have gone via Stamford, Connecticut. Got a picture outside the towers.
With a big belt.
With a big belt. But
there, isn't it now, the big belt?
Yeah, they've got outside HQ. But the timing wasn't going to quite work out. The costs weren't going to quite work out. And then it was like, let's just do our original plan and go and get pissed in Brooklyn. And that worked brilliantly. Yes. So I have no complaints about how things turned out, not least when. I watched about half an hour of that Dynamite in a bar and it was mostly contained to Daddy Ass and Jay. What the hell is this?
Was that the match you were chatting to that woman about?
Yeah. She's owned a bar, an amazing bar in Brooklyn. That is a laundrette, functioning laundrette. And it's an if you know, you know place. So the washing machine's going round. And then my cousin knew about it and he was like, these aren't washing machines. Check this out. Is it a door? Yes. And you go into a bar behind these working washing machines, and she was just like explaining how the bar works and that. She was saying she'd seen John Cena wrestle at Madison Square Garden when we told her why we were in America. And then my cousin was like, we don't normally get to watch it at like normal times of night. Would you mind putting it on in the background? She sticks it on. We go, aha, look, there's a license plate behind the bar that says Ass Man. Turn on the telly. There's a wrestling show that continues to have the Ass Man.
Why did the Ass Man go away?
It's 2024. He's older than Terry Funk was in the Attitude Era.
What was it? What was the stat we read somewhere? I think this is the case. He's older than Iron Sheik was when he won the Gimmick Battle Royal.
God!
I think that's right.
So, like, so the Bobby Heenan gag is going to be like, it's going to be 2028 before Daddy asked us a job.
We were talking about the Darby Allin match the other day.
Oh, yeah.
3.1.
The one, and then the 3.1 kick out.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. What were we talking about?
What were we talking about?
So you explaining, you were talking to the woman about the match.
Yeah, I'd say, pissed, by the way. So, like, not at my analytical best. I was like, he's a bad guy, so he'll, like, probably hit him in the nuts and then his friends come out. He just happened in front of our eyes. It's like, this guy knows his onions, yeah? Another round. Let's talk about the business.
Yeah, what do you reckon we're going to get from Mercedes Money? Just oh, I'll be ringside for the TBS title match, or
an accusation, maybe?
Accusation.
Yeah. Is it getting a bit? We haven't really talked about. Is it getting a bit awkward? This Mercedes Money.
That's crap. Run? I mean, it's not good, is it?
No, I wasn't sure if that was like.
Well, we're the fourth right podcasters. Yeah,
I wasn't sure if that was stepping over a line or not. Good. But like, it's not been very good.
Not been very good at all.
Your words just keep ringing in my ears. Of like, can she not? Like, is she not cleared? And if that's the case, yeah. I get it. You're in Boston and you do big business and all that.
Look at a town. A card and you've got Osprey.
Yeah.
Yeah. She looks the biggest.
Why do you need a third when the third can't go?
All of our excitement about her being, and this word feels cursed because I feel like once we said it about Saraya, about her being a game changer for this division, was rooted in, like, she is at her, she shines her brightest in matches. Yes. And that was, we would have said that about Sasha Banks, by the way. Love Sasha Banks. 100%. But the promos were just an accompaniment to the matches. It was bell to bell where it really happened for Sasha Banks. And we've not had a second of it. So this is, what more could we have expected realistically, you know? Like, she's got, was like Jennifer Pepin's hiring, tied to working closely with her all those years. So presumably there's, you know, like she's happy with the creative direction thus far. But the fact that we haven't had a match, maybe they're thinking she is a match is a draw, so I understand why you would save it for, what, double or nothing? That's ages away.
That is ages away. She could have just beat Serena Deeb if she was cleared or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, here I am. I'm great.
Yeah.
I'm an unbelievable in-ring talent. Like, CM Punk didn't have to be involved in the title picture immediately. He had, like, a cool match along similar lines against a really good in-ring opponent who he kind of respected or whatever. It's just not been good. It's not been, acting was awful last week. Our promos have just been so soundbitey.
She's another tweener because of the Willow Nightingale.
Aye.
Lack of trust.
Aye.
Theoretically a babyface, but she's already pied Willow Nightingale. And so, like, she's another character. And the CEO thing lends itself to being a heel, even though right now she's a babyface because she kind of has to be.
It just feels like...
it's not dead. Like, I don't want it to be a thing in, like...
It's been so misjudged.
Yeah. In a month when she wrestles and it's great.
Oh, absolutely.
I will not be the recipient of a C tweet from somebody who's been waiting 8 weeks for a Mercedes match. But, like, it is pretty much what we're hanging around for.
People were going, see about AJ after SmackDown, AJ Styles. I was doing my absolute nuts.
Because he was good for a change.
It's the Natalya versus Rhea Ripley, Miz versus Ricochet effect of... That's the way to win.
Yeah.
WWE craft for 20 years gets good. All right, it's the best. Is it? You wrestle completely bang average gentlemen's threes for 4 years and then flirt with a four. And it's like, I thought you said he was washed. That's the way. That's how people get over now.
To not be
episodic
washed.
Episodic TV sucks, man. I'm telling you. You can't just be really good on episodic TV 52 weeks a year. You've got to be bad 408 times, that'd be really good. People are like,
it's like the
that's
worst,
what it's all about.
It's like the worst wrestler whisperer. I got the secret kid on how not to be washed. Oh, what is it? Like, why isn't the wizened dead man? Be washed.
Be washed.
That's
true.
Be washed.
Who have you got winning Copeland and Willow versus Hart and King?
I was saying obvious winner, obviously, because it feels like Copeland and Willow have to win.
Happened to Claudio. Remember the Seth Rollins match? It's like, see?
Yeah.
In his form now.
Aye. Probably, maybe the House of Black, actually. Cause
interference from Malakai? Or?
Yeah, it's the trios match with Kingston and Briscoe, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Aye, probably the House of Black then, because then the babyfaces will... It's a House of Black trios feud. The babyfaces will win at the pay-per-view.
Babyfaces so, like, should win at the pay-per-view and then yeah. draw line under it.
Aye.
Speaking of trios matches, it's the Elite versus Pac, Daniel Garcia and Penta El Zero Miedo tonight.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
I think it's... Penta should do the job.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't really... It's that stupid wrestling thing of, hang on, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hang on, if Pac beats Matthew Jackson here the week before, on the week of Dynasty, that means he's going to beat Okada. Does anyone have that thought going through their head? Wrestling's stupid. Kind of in a mood with it. I'm in a wrestling come down phase.
Yeah.
And if that's informed the tone of this podcast, I'm sorry, but AEW has looked finished for the last 2 weeks.
From the moment we touched down in America.
we've broken it. I'm never flying again. This match should be really, really good. I want the Young Bucks to wear different gear.
Yeah, he's doing a bit of a campaign of yours, yeah.
It's really starting to wind us up. Mm. It's got the aesthetic trappings of a mid-card gimmick when I see them in action. The Sting match was different. That was magic. Almost everything else has had that. Don't seem quite as good anymore. It's one of those where so much of it on paper works and so much of it in execution, this Young Buck stuff, continues to be great. But it just feels like they're not as dynamic as they used to be. And if they're not, they are going the perfect way about it. They've found new characters to be able to excuse being slower and getting just proper trad heat. And that's not a bad thing. Maybe it will just take some... Maybe they're a little bit thrash and it's going to take some getting used to. They've worked... It just seems to catch up on wrestlers like that.
The Kenny comeback's going to be interesting for that, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
Knowing what he's gone through.
He's too clever. He's too clever. He's already had that thrashed run and been amazing. Yeah. So
came back in the compression vest.
Yeah, and he came back with the Ospreay match and did the best methodical match of all time at Wrestle Kingdom, basically.
Which
work is what
so
it
many
was.
Of those Brock Lesnar Finn Balor stomach matches, and they're going to be amazing, aren't they? Like,
but the Bucks for me, I just want you to start wearing wrestling attire again because it just looks more mid card than it has any right to be. When this feels really, really good elsewhere. I just don't think this will be on the level of their best trios matches. Mm.
Daniel Garcia's, that's interesting. Like, it's almost like...
Body,
he's, well, but he's, well, he's it feels like he's been remembered.
Coming off a big win over Angelico on Collision, so...
But he was hot and then he was cooled. So this, I think this feels like an earnest attempt to sort of like, to put him in there with the Elite and have him... Like, there's two programs going on, and he's part of neither of them, but it's like, we want to try and maintain where he was.
He's got a grin on his face.
So, nothing against Daniel Garcia. We love him here. We think he's a fantastic wrestler. Is there an element of putting him in here, and I've no doubt the other two could very easily, and probably will, do this. Is he in there so that Okada can do the Daniel Garcia hip thrust?
That'd be funny.
That would be good.
That would be
good.
Because
that's not the only reason. He's a great wrestler, obviously.
He's got the bond with FTR, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So this, like, there's his link to it because of FTR. But
I wonder if they've remembered that. Who doesn't have a bond with somebody else in AEW right now? We've got Copeland and Willow Nightingale, Orange Cassidy, and every single babyface who's ever worked for the company. I don't think they've.
Oh, by the way, I'm a Trent guy now. I know it's been a couple of weeks, but they finally pulled the trigger on the turn.
Yeah.
It's like, let's go. I want to watch
that
this.
That was the best part of the Dynamite. That was Wooster and Mayes. To be honest, I'll be watching this match primarily for a glimpse at the Okada Pac chemistry. You know, when certain wrestlers just don't necessarily. Two great wrestlers, just oil and water. Brett and Sean, other than Montreal.
I wasn't mad on the New Japan Danielson Okada. It's good. I still don't think they've hit whatever their ceiling is. Yeah.
It just happens weirdly. I've got concerns that Pac and Okada will have pacing issues in their match. I've said this, I'm going to say it for the third time later this week. They both have a habit of missing a gear and going to that finishing sequence of like, oh, it's getting really slow this. Oh, I got great at the end, but it was a bit meh. They both have previous separately, so together I have concerns. I am not a rube who's just got picked off the street. I know how this match is going to work. They are going to tease the interaction, and then the Bucks will get a card out of there. You'll get a minute of it probably maximum between Okada and Pac. I want to see the chemistry. I've got concerns about the pacing issues when they meet.
I think Pac could... He's not got Kenny's mind, but he's got his physical attributes. He could play the Omega role in an Omega-Okada match very well, couldn't he? Like, he could counter out of stuff early on, or like they could, if they don't do the slow 5 minutes at the start, it could just be hot from the off, couldn't it?
I've got what amazing potential counter here. Ripcord, turn around you. I'm going to lariat you in the face. Lunge. Lariat attempt. Pack. Ducks, does that front flip out? Lighting up the Kreutz Wrath.
Yeah, all-timer.
But that's that for the Rainmaker.
Yeah. That's the that. Stuff they've got in them.
One final match to talk about. And I'll just check my notes. It's the only women's match on the card. It's a mixed tag, but the only singles women's match on the card. It's Deonna Purrazzo versus Mariah May. Oh boy, this feels like one of the most obvious 1 hour, 20-minute matches I've ever seen.
Yeah, I've got no... Mariah May's been really, really good.
Oh, yeah.
Deonna Purrazzo, quite frankly, hasn't. If we're going to be brutally honest here, and that's what we should do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we should do. Deonna Purrazzo is in danger of following that Soraya, Tyra Valkyrie route of brought in to not inconsiderable fanfare as sort of a name... who simply does not produce the goods in ring, which an AEW audience expects, and then gone. Because Purrazzo's had, I would say, one good match in AEW, and that was the debut. Elsewhere, it has not worked out at all. It gives me no pleasure. I had really high hopes. But she hasn't produced.
I saw her in person as the mystery partner of the FBI. She was amazing. Like, perfect as, like, the actual, like, against Los Barriqua of all people. So it was like, oh, she can go. Like, all these old legends, and it was, like, just so nice seeing her in a context where she could be comfortably the best and super confident and really well received. And I was like, oh, all of this has already evaporated. And it, like, all of this goodwill and all of this excitement that was in that building has evaporated on television. And now what, she's presumably going to turn on on Thunder Rosa?
Yeah, this feels like just the vehicle for Thunder Rosa and Tony Storm to get into it. Yeah. Despite the fact that Thunder Rosa said, I don't want your help, Deonna Purrazzo.
Well, does she cost the belt at the pay-per-view?
Does
Thunder Rosa neutralise the Mariah May
threat? We'll save that for, save something for later in the week.
So yeah, Mariah May wins because her and Deonna Purrazzo and Thunder Rosa can't coexist anymore. And
like, so we're going to scuffle breaks out between Tony and Thunder.
Yeah.
And then that spooks Deonna or distracts Deonna, and then Ryan Ray gets a roll up.
Aye. The stardom overlap stuff I don't think is working either, if I'm honest. Like,
on Collision was really good.
Early days, I guess. But I that segment at the end of the match last week didn't really hit for me. Nor did it hit in the building, which I think doesn't help. Like, I don't know. Just, I don't want to be like a bad faith internet critic, but I would like to know like a tiny bit more about the people I'm suddenly supposed to care. Oh my God! Like, I don't know. Maybe I do need to do some Googling, I suppose. But
there's lots of different conversations happening at the same time. There's no nuance on either side. There is a way to not insult your audience and make them care at the exact same time.
Yeah.
And AEW is not doing that.
Oh, before we wrap up, we need to get to the name of the game. Before we get to the name of the game, we need to get to the aim of the game.
So. Well, the aim of the game is to identify to the hour, minute, and second the first time you hear the first note for the first entrance theme for the first woman to appear for the only one-on-one women's match on Dynamite. And the idea behind this is to italicize, underscore, put in bold, the apathetic, bloody have to, it's 2024, we can't not, approach to women's wrestling in AEW. And we jingleize what is AEW's thought process and not ours, just to really put over how much they feel like they have to do it. It's not a passion project, is it, realistically? Mm. That jingle is, don't worry, guys, when the women come out to play, the main event ain't too far away. And that's the aim of the game. And the name of the game is... Well, this is...
that Sables theme? Yeah, I thought it was good.
Yeah. I level with you, boys. I had an idea for a different... Because I'm going to start doing, like, different songs, but with Ladies' Night in the lyrics, but I forgot what it was halfway through my spiel. So, we'll both tell a joke, and I'll think of it.
Well, I'll just say, if you like reworked versions of famous songs, check out last week's Wrestle Culture. Have you seen this? You hear about this?
No.
Obviously, big week, all the fallout from WrestleMania. And what better to sum up what an amazing couple of weeks it's been than by covering an ABBA classic and doing Mana Mia on Wrestle Culture.
Oh, that's good. It's good stuff. That is good stuff.
And I went like too far. It was like two verses and a chorus, basically. Oh, no. Yeah.
I am the one and only women's match on Dynamite. It's Ladies' Night.
Yes.
Chesney Harwood there.
Full disclosure, as a man who has to write a different song every week, you've made a real rod for your own back there. But I've no idea who won it last. It's been so long since we played this. I'll go first, bollocks to it.
Wait, then I need to get my phone out.
Shout out, as always, whilst you're doing that, to the Panda Blair himself, Adam Blair, at Adam Wilton 4, and Jose Palomares, at the Hole 11, the guys who always take care of the...
data.
Thank you for this kind of thing. Current standings, by the way. Adam Wilborn, 3 correct guesses on the year. Michael Hamflet, 3 correct guesses on the year. Michael Sidgwick, still to get off the mark, but...
It's April!
Ladies Night champion... For 2023, so never rule him out.
Yeah, I'm the Leicester City of ladies.
So I will go 1 hour. Right, I think they're gonna, I think main event is obviously Ospreay Claudio. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to be given plenty of time, but there is going to be some shenanigans in this match as well.
I've already put one call on, by the way.
Yeah, but they're obviously got the overrun as well. So I'll go. I'll go 1 hour 23 minutes dead, please, Michael Sidgwick.
Hamflet?
I had to go a bit earlier because sometimes they've done like go home promos. So
good
like
point.
Joe and Swerve might end the show. Like they've had Jeff and Moxley do it in the past. It's like when there's pay-per-views on the horizon. Like a little bit early in that. So I'll go 1:15 and 10 seconds.
I think I'm going to split the old difference. 1 hour.
Yes.
Call on. 19. Just like saying it.
Yeah.
There we go.
Oh,
and then boom goes the dynamite.
You should definitely get on that on the soundboard.
If the show was great tonight, I will praise it to the hilt.
Yes.
I just, what they're doing? What they're doing in the last 2 weeks, man. That's a small fry operation. Absolutely.
So you can like line up your new sort of ladies' night. If the show's great tonight, I won't call it s***.
You know, they have embodied the Pissant Company designation over the last 2 weeks for me. Just felt so small and petty.
What do you make of, this is relevant, what do you make of Tony Khan's comments? I agree with him, but it's pissed off a bunch of people that for years have been like saying, enjoy your wrestling, follow me on Twitch. Like him saying, no, competition's great. It's still the hottest thing in all of wrestling. He's right.
Yeah,
it goes back to Austin and Goldberg on the front of PWI in the 90s. It's still...
I do not blame his mentality.
And that's why he's justifying...
If I'm Tony Khan, right, I would probably have just spunked myself daft, drank margaritas, and just, you know, lived in a cave for all that money.
Yeah.
But if I'm Tony Khan, and I decide to, you know, actually do something with that money and do the passion, I'd be so annoyed. It's like, when he says to be AEW is to be constantly under attack, it's like, it comes from a position of like quite ridiculous privilege.
Yeah.
But he's got a point.
Yeah.
I mean, you must be like, oh, shut the... everyone who just buries it for sport, for grift, for money, and you got WWE, do it at the perfect times. Like WrestleMania weekend. I mean, they suck those, don't they? It's like, how big that stadium is. Yes, they do suck. They are small. I would be annoyed if I was him.
Yeah.
And I do agree.
Remember at Clash at the Castle? The random Triple H show, Hawani. Yeah, the beat our developmental show. Good,
yeah, well done.
Good job.
Well done.
He's good at it, isn't he?
He's disturbingly good at it. But he's right. Just show it. Just show it. Don't tell me.
Mm. Well, let us know your thoughts ahead of Dynamite tonight on X at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at...
Michael Hamflett.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at...
I'm Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. And me, Hamflett and Sidgwick, will be back later on today to review NXT. But for now, this has been the Dynamite Preview. My thanks to Hamflett and Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.